We're getting up to speed on President Trump's impeachment. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As of what we know right now, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has not sent the articles of impeachment over to the Senate. The Senate will eventually hold a trial to determine if President Trump should be removed from office, but it can't take up the issue until the House formally transmits the articles. President Trump is the third U.S. president in history to be impeached. And how do you feel about the impeachment? How do you want the Senate to respond? Do you think President Trump should be removed from office over his call with Ukraine's president and his response to congressional investigators? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to join in. Tim Hagel is an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. Tim, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
So why are House Democrats not turning over the articles of impeachment and not naming the House prosecutors?
Well, it's a little tough, I suppose, to understand the strategy involved here. But the public reason, at least, is that Speaker Pelosi is looking to try to leverage her turning over those or sending those articles over to the Senate and naming the House managers, as you indicated, to try to ensure that, from her point of view at least, that the trial in the Senate is a fair one. And by that, of course, what she means is that Majority Leader McConnell, Republican in the Senate, has said that they're going to be working with the White House because, of course, Republicans don't see the impeachment as having been fair itself. It was highly partisan from their point of view. And so they're perfectly willing to work with the president and not serve as impartial jurors like they would in a civil trial or a criminal trial. But from Pelosi's point of view, she doesn't want that. She wants to have more witnesses called in the Senate. And that's something that Republicans seem to be resisting at this point. So it's kind of this back and forth. And from Pelosi, by withholding the articles, that she can stall the process, hoping to leverage that to get her way in terms of how the trial goes in the Senate. But the Senate's just not going to go along with that, it seems.
Well, we've heard from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell saying that he's in total coordination with the White House over this trial. Is that fair? Is that impartial?
Well, again, it depends on whose point of view you're looking at here. The Democrats have been making the argument that it's not. Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat senator from New York, has been saying that that's not appropriate, and other Democrats have been saying the same thing. But again, from the Republican point of view, they don't think that the impeachment itself was fair, that it wasn't impartial. And of course, some of the people, Democrats, complaining about Mitch McConnell not being fair or impartial, perhaps even calling for him to recuse himself, seem to forget that a number of Democrats, particularly those that are running for president, have said that they think Donald Trump should be removed from office. And so they're not exactly impartial either. And we really can't expect that. This isn't a criminal trial. It's not a civil trial, even, where you have to, by a constitutional mandate, have an impartial jury. It's a political process, and so certain analogies that you make with the criminal justice or civil justice system just aren't appropriate.
Congressman Mark Pocan is a Democrat from Madison who voted for impeachment, and he argued on the House floor that President Trump had betrayed his oath of office.
He abused the power of his office for personal and political gain and has refused to cooperate with a co-equal branch of government. This is a vote for our Constitution, setting the precedent for all future presidents, Democrat or Republican.
So Pocan had made similar comments on our program before the vote. Tim, if House Democrats didn't impeach President Trump, would Congress have set a dangerous precedent for future presidents?
By not impeaching? Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so. You know, it's always hard to tell. And one of the most difficult things about this whole thing is trying to separate a person's political inclinations from what's actually going on. And, you know, if you're a Republican, you tend to support Republicans. If you're Democrat, you support the Democratic side of things. And that's not particularly surprising. We're in, as everybody seems to know, a fairly highly partisan period right now. And it's hard to look past that. Some of the charges that Democrats have made would seem to be okay. You know, is it really that this terrible thing that Trump has done, or is it you just don't like Trump? Is it Trump being Trump? And as sort of in a joking way, the Republicans use the short phrase "orange man bad," meaning, you know, because they say that Trump has kind of got this orange tint to him because of his tan and he's a bad guy. We don't like him. We don't like anything he does. Republicans point out, well, look, if you're going to impeach Trump over these sorts of things, what about all these things? And they point to a list of things that they complaints that they had against Obama. Say, well, we could have impeached him for all these sorts of things. And so that's part of the problem that we have now, is that if you're going to dress up the things that Trump did that you don't like as abuse of office, abuse of power, obstruction of Congress, then the next president that happens to be a Democrat could be in having that problem as well. So it's not so much that Congress necessarily would have set a bad precedent by not impeaching. The question is whether they set a bad precedent by impeaching.
We're looking at President Trump's impeachment. What happens next with University of Iowa political scientist Tim Hagel at our side? You can join in. How do you feel about President Trump's impeachment? Do you support House Democrats impeaching the president? How do you think the Senate should respond next? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Willem now in Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Hello. I think there are plenty of reasons to impeach. I think the impeachment was proper because even going back to the Mueller report, which I read in it's available in public libraries, even the Mueller report had mentioned the president's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, was involved in some sort of meeting with a man who was determined by our intelligence agencies to be a Russian agent, and they were discussing ways that Trump's presidency would be useful to Russia in their Ukraine policy. And then the president of the United States, in an unprecedented move never before done by any president in U.S. history, used his personal lawyer to carry out foreign policy. Usually foreign policy of the United States is vetted through the Senate by, you know, approving ambassadors and things like that, but no one approved of the president's private lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, carrying out meetings with Ukrainian officials and others about this thing with the Bidens, which the president himself called for on the White House lawn. So I think there's plenty of reasons to impeach the president. And I think the thing with Mitch McConnell is, in theory, they take an oath to come at this Senate trial with an impartial view and hear the evidence. And I think there's plenty of evidence from very credible people like
Willem,
Dr. Hill and Ambassador Taylor.
And let's pause right there, Willem, and allow Tim Hagel to respond there. First, Tim, with the president's private attorney, Rudy Giuliani, representing the U.S. On foreign affairs.
Yeah, that's something that apparently is being looked into by certain agencies. I'm not sure if it's the FBI or other investigatory bodies. So we'll have to kind of see what's going to happen with that. One of the things that's certainly nobody can disagree with is that President Trump has been a disruptor. That's partly the reason, one of the reasons why he got elected in the first place. So it's no surprise that he does things differently and does things in a way that often upsets people, and not just Democrats. Lots of Republicans are very unhappy with him at various times. You've got the Never Trumpers, people that had been conservatives or Republicans that just simply refused to support Trump in any way, basically, and others that begrudgingly do so. And the fact that Trump has picked Giuliani to do this, it certainly, at a minimum, raised eyebrows for what's going on here. And the question is, well, has he stepped over some particular line? And again, this is where you get into the ideological side of things, where Democrats will more quickly say that, yes, he's crossed a line, whereas Republicans are more reluctant to do so. And that's not unlike, to a certain extent, we saw back in the 90s with the Clinton impeachment, where Democrats were essentially supporting Clinton, not so much what he had done with the perjury side of things, but basically trying to say, well, it was a personal thing, what he did with Monica Lewinsky, and it shouldn't be calls for impeachment. And Republicans were saying the opposite. So again, the ideological component is
pausing
difficult to sort out.
Right there with Tim Hagel, University of Iowa. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about President Trump's impeachment here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The president's recent tweets have referred to impeachment as a hoax and an assault on America. His reelection campaign has started framing impeachment as a referendum on how Democrats regard him and his supporters. So have you taken stock of the impeachment inquiry? Do you plan to vote in the presidential elections next year? How much will President Trump's impeachment factor in your vote? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. University of Iowa political scientist Tim Hagel is staying with us. So, Tim, let's look for a moment at what polls find. Just before the House vote, Marquette University released a poll gauging how Wisconsin voters felt about impeaching and removing the president. Here's poll director Charles Franklin describing the results on our sister show, Central Time.
Stability is definitely the takeaway from this month's poll. This time in December, we had 40% favoring impeach and remove and 52 opposed. It was 40 and 53 a month ago. So hardly changed.
And a Washington Post ABC News poll finds Americans are basically split 50-50 on impeachment. Tim, what does this say about how Americans are feeling about what's going on here?
Well, not surprisingly, they're split. As I mentioned before, we're at a time when there's a very distinct partisan split on a number of issues, not just impeachment. Impeachment, of course, is extremely serious. And sometimes you wonder if people are actually taking it as serious as it is. I mean, the potential to remove a president is obviously very serious. But, you know, again, trying to separate the I don't like Trump from the yes, we have to remove this president is, again, sometimes very difficult to do. And the fact that the needle isn't moving, so to speak, on the polling side of things, at least to a certain extent, suggests that, the Democrats didn't make a strong enough case. They certainly tried to do so in terms of in the House hearings, certainly tried to make their case, but apparently not well enough. Although part of the problem there was that it wasn't the hearings weren't viewed by a huge number of people. The people that were maybe either needed to watch the hearings for one reason or another because of their jobs or because of keen political interest, they were tuned in. But for the most part, a lot of people weren't. And that suggests that maybe it's not something that sort of partisan flavor to it wasn't something that they were really interested in. And so it's not clear what the overall effect this is going to have, as your lead-in indicated, in the election.
Let's go to Chris now in La Crosse. Hi, Chris.
Hey, good morning. My question this morning is that I keep hearing that, the president has been impeached. And if he has been impeached, why is it not over? You know, why is it going to the Senate? And what is the difference between drawing up articles of impeachment and impeachment itself?
Good questions, Chris. Tim Hagel.
Let me start, with the first one, where the process is set up as a two-stage process. The House gets to vote on articles of impeachment, which is like an indictment in a criminal trial, and it just takes a majority vote to do so. Then they're supposed to send the articles of impeachment over to the Senate, where the trial is conducted. And it's not a trial like in a courthouse kind of a thing, but it has certain similarities to it. But the senators are the ones who vote on it. It takes a two-thirds vote of the senators present and voting to remove a person from office, whether it's a president or other people like a vice president or federal judges, things of that nature. The second question has to do with, well, was the president actually impeached? And apparently there's some disagreement about this among legal scholars, that they figure once the vote was taken, that yes, that's impeachment, that's it. But as we were saying at the top of the hour, it's not quite that simple, because apparently the House Speaker Pelosi has to transmit those articles over to the Senate and name the House managers, meaning the people that will be arguing the case in front of the Senate. And she hasn't done that. So some people argue that, well, that means that it hasn't been an impeachment. But I think for all practical purposes, yes, President Trump has been impeached. Whether some of the ministerial side of things is going to take place, we don't know yet, or we don't know when. But at some point, I'm sure they will get transmitted over and we'll have some sort of a trial in the Senate.
We heard from the senator from Alaska, Lisa Murkowski, this week, being concerned that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is in total coordination with the White House, and she's been reflecting on why senators seem to think that this is just a slam dunk and over, and not really wanting to hear witnesses. What do you make of her, and are there other Republicans in this camp?
I think there may be some other Republicans. That Murkowski is one of those ones who always seems to be maybe in the middle in things, sometimes would vote for the non-Republican position, vote with the Democrats. She did that with the Kavanaugh, the vote to approve Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh as a Supreme Court justice. And so she's one. Susan Collins of Maine is another one. Mitt Romney is occasionally seen to be a person that might deviate from the Republican side of things. But two or three isn't going to affect the vote to remove Trump. That's going to take a two-thirds vote. But if a couple of Republican senators vote with the Democrats in terms of calling more witnesses, then you may see all these folks that the Democrats want to call, John Bolton and a few others, staffers and so forth, people that might actually know, well, did Trump ever actually say, yeah, we've got to get some dirt on Biden for the 2020 election, as opposed to looking into any kind of corruption that occurred in the 2016 election. And that's the 2016 election concern is Trump's argument. Democrats are arguing, no, it's because he's trying to get dirt for 2020. And that's really the nub of the whole thing here. And so, yeah, it can make a difference. And what the reason that could hurt Republicans is that if the trial is drawn out, if there are more witnesses, and it becomes a big further stain on Republicans, it's still probably not going to get the president removed. But what will happen is that some vulnerable Republican senators may have harder time in their reelection bid. And perhaps that's what the Democrats are looking for, is maybe not so much that they're going to be able to remove Trump, but that they can regain control of the Senate.
Voting for with your conscience may have ramifications in reelection for some of these lawmakers.
Yeah, well, whether it's their conscience or whether it's voting for their party, whatever that vote is going to be, it's going to probably make some people mad. And so that's certainly going to be an issue in their reelection bid.
Well, let's go to Tom now in Burlington. Hi, Tom.
In President Nixon's time, he signed a bill that said when the House of Representatives and Congress send money over to the White House to spend it in a timely manner, a time is of the essence. Now, if we sent that money over there, the Republicans and Democrats, they got there, they sent the money, said it's supposed to go over there to Ukraine, and Mr. Trump delayed it. Now, if they're having an impeachment, do they need a simple majority to make the amendments to the bill, and then they need a two-thirds majority for the impeachment? But are they on record? Are the Republicans on record in the first bill they sent over there, are they on record, or was it by unanimous consent so that they can slip out of the situation? And then will there be retaliation? If he's out of there, there is no retaliation, or what could he do to hurt them?
Tom, thanks for the call. Tim Hagel, Tom is getting into the votes themselves.
Right. Yeah, the as far as the votes are concerned, although they didn't have a roll call vote in the House for the impeachment, we do know how individual people voted. And I don't recall all the names of there were two Democrats in one instance, three in another, that voted no on the articles of impeachment. All the Republicans voted no. Tulsi Gabbard voted present on both of them. So that was known fairly quickly. But in the Senate, we'll know who voted which particular way on the removal or even on any votes to have witnesses, which only takes a majority vote. But the key vote, of course, is, again, the removal, assuming we get to the point where we actually have a trial and a vote on it. And we'll know every senator how he or she voted.
So Saturday Night Live did a holiday-themed skit this month where families of different political views debated the president's impeachment. And near the end of the skit, the narrator made a joke about something they all have in common.
None of them live in the three states that will decide our election. They'll debate the issues all year long, but then it all comes down to 1,000 people in Wisconsin who won't even think about the election till the morning of.
So, Tim, 1,000 uninformed Wisconsin voters. What do you think of SNL's prediction there on the 2020 election?
Well, of course, being from a fellow Midwestern state, of course, the Midwest is extremely important in all of this. Iowa gets lots of criticism, of course, because of its caucuses and starting the process. But I think what that skit is getting at is the importance of swing states, again, like Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania are often mentioned as well. And again, a lot of people just, you know, politics isn't their be-all and end-all. They've got lives to live, things to do that are, from their perspective, a whole lot more important than what's going on in the Beltway. And so, yeah, that they'll kind of get to the point where, all right, so, you know, we're living our life. Yeah, we kind of have a general idea as far as what's going on, but they're not concerned about the nitty gritty. But then at some point they say, all right, we're getting close to the election. We need to make a decision here. What's going on? Give me the thrust, the main thrust of all of this, and make a reasonable decision. The fact that people aren't paying attention to every little twist and turn does not mean that they're uninformed by any means. It means that they probably have decided that this is not particularly important at this point.
Tim, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Tim Hagel is an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. Coming up, if you exchange gifts this time of year, you know firsthand the mountains of trash that follow the holiday merriment. From ribbons and wrapping paper to product packaging, old electronics. So what questions do you have about recycling? Join in 800-642-1234. It's holiday trash and what goes where right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're getting tips on what's suitable for recycling, what's not, and what goes to the landfill. Between Thanksgiving and New Year's Day, garbage cans are bulging usually, and national figures bear that out. Typically, every household piles on about 1,000 pounds of extra waste, but much of that can be recycled. So how do you reduce the waste from food and gifts during the holidays? Have you found ways to wrap gifts with materials that are reusable or not meant to be thrown away? And what questions do you have about what can and cannot be recycled? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in. Brian Johnson is recycling coordinator and public information officer for the City of Madison Streets Division. Brian, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, let's start with that mound of wrapping paper. What can be recycled?
Well, your most traditional wrapping papers can be. Anything that has lots of foil and other things like that on there, or any of the, like if it's covered with glitter or any other sort of like gewgaws or something, that wouldn't be good. But the stuff that just regular paper, that's perfectly fine to go into your recycling cart. But also the size of the paper matters too. Anything smaller than about a Post-it note is actually going to be too small for that recycling cart, because what happens, that really tiny bits of pieces acts like shredded paper then. So it gets mixed in with all the glass and stuff like that at the sorting facility for your recycling. So you just, you know, bigger pieces, anything smaller than a Post-it. If it's tiny little shreds of paper, kind of put it in a clear bag, depending on where you live. Because every recycling is regional, and so the rules are going to vary depending on who your collector is, what their processing capabilities are. I know the rules of Madison here very well, but it's going to vary around the state. So just make certain you know what the rules are where you live.
What about gift bags and bows and those other types of wrapping material?
Yeah, those are pretty much going to be universally not recyclable. And you got those bows, the weird silky gift bags with the weird tied handles and stuff like that. Yeah, no, don't put those in the cart. But those also can be easily reused, especially if you're careful with the bows. I mean, everybody knows kids are super careful with their bows and that when opening presents on Christmas morning. But if you have the ability to peel them off, you can certainly just retape them next year. Bags are great. They can certainly travel around your family for a while. Just no reason you couldn't just fold them up, pop them in a closet, keep them for a while.
What should we do if we receive new electronics? How should we dispose of old smartphones, tablets?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge important, because there's so much of electronic stuff that's in our life right now. And that, too, is going to vary on where you live, because there's going to be just different opportunities where what's there. I mean, here in the city of Madison, we have two drop-off sites that are open year-round. The residents have to bring the stuff to us. That's nothing that you want to put in the cart. I'm pretty confident statewide you're not going to be able to just throw your old tablet computer or e-reader in your recycling cart. Don't do that. You have to take it to a facility for them to recycle it safely. Now, some places might charge, some might not. I know a lot of like big box stores also have electronics recycling programs like Best Buy, Staples, places like that. But yeah, just check with your municipality first, with your public works department, see what opportunities are available there. and go that route.
Do you see a big change in volume this time of year?
Oh, yeah. Well, you certainly see that creep up right around Black Friday is whenever we start seeing the parade of people into our drop-off site with just more and more cardboard boxes and more televisions as people are still getting rid of those big, clunky, tube, leaded glass TVs. We still see plenty of those around. So you just have but as other early first-generation flat-panel TVs, those start coming into and that, you just start seeing a wave of that. But the other part that's important about televisions, I want to make this point here too, is that there's hazardous material in a lot of televisions. The old leaded glass TVs have the tube TVs, the big heavy ones. There's lead in there. And the first generation, like little HD TVs, those are basically fluorescent tubes in there. So there's mercury vapor in there. So you can't just set it out to the curb and hope that they just get picked up. Because what happens if they get kicked in? Or there's potential concerns with that. So just you have to make certain you're handling that stuff correctly and getting it recycled the safe way.
What happens once you do drop off your electronic tablet or TV in the right way? Where do they go from there?
Well, there's a few big electronics recyclers here in the state. There's one out of Janesville called Universal Recycling Technologies. That's who the city of Madison contracts with. They take that material. They take great care in destroying all that sensitive data on there. I know that's a big concern for people. Like, well, what happens if something, heaven forbid, gets a hold of this computer and does something with it they shouldn't be doing or be able to pull my information off of there? With these kind of big electronics recyclers, that's a big concern for them too. That's their business model. They don't want someone's identity being stolen off of some recycled computer. So they take that very, very seriously. The other big one too in Wisconsin is out of La Crosse, I believe. It's like Dynamic Lifecycle Solutions, I think their name is. Like, they changed their name recently. But those are the two kind of bigger players for electronics recycling in the state. But there's other options out there. But that data security thing is something those companies take seriously. They're not just going to be treated real loose. So consumers got nothing to worry about when it comes to returning those old phones or tablets. Take them to the place where your community says they're supposed to go. It'll be handled the right way.
Talking with Brian Johnson, he's spokesperson for the City of Madison Streets Division. We're looking at the ins and outs of recycling. Do you have questions on what you can and can't recycle? Do you give gifts that don't require packaging, like experiences or charity donations or homemade gifts? What about donating and recycling old electronics? Join in with your questions, your suggestions, your tips, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Brian, what do we do about styrofoam peanuts and packaging materials?
Well, styrofoam peanuts are going to be uniformly trash. There's really nothing you can do with them as far as recycling them. Now, there are some places that may take them for donation, like certain shipping stores or even certain thrift stores that sell some more delicate items might be interested in the peanuts and that. That may be one way. If you get stuck with the peanuts, that might be an option for you. As far as like the molded brick polystyrene styrofoam, the thing you'd see around like stereo equipment, if people even buy stereo equipment anymore, I'm showing my age. That kind of material can be recycled in certain spots, but you can't just put it in your recycling cart at your house. Now, there are, like, it is just made from like a number 6 plastic. But because the way that sorting system works on the back end, it's just going to rip that styrofoam bits apart, so you can't just put it in the cart. I know in the city of Madison, we have a drop-off program because people can bring us styrofoam, then we haul it to a company that actually has the machine to densify that styrofoam, and then they sell it back on the open marketplace. But that opportunity isn't available for everywhere. So that's why you have to make certain what your opportunities are where you live and be engaged with that stuff to try to do the right thing. Don't just throw it in your recycling cart and go, someone else will take care of it. It's like, no, don't do that. That's a big problem in the recycling industry. Make certain you're taking the right steps to handle that stuff the right way.
Well, we heard about that new word, wish cycle, that you just throw something in, you hope for the best. That's not a really good way of doing it.
Well, yeah, no, because with the recycling markets as they are, it's tight right now. With the import restrictions that China put in place, it kind of created a glut of domestic recycling commodity supply, basically. So the price is down. So the best way for material to move in this sort of system is if it to be super clean. And we all kind of play a role in here. Recyclers on the back end, they're doing the best they can to sort the material to make it as clean as they can. But we also need the consumers that are supplying that material to make the right choices too, to not put in like things like water filters that feel like plastic, but they're full of charcoal, and so you just sort of really wish them to be, so you throw them in there. or like those little single-use coffee pods. Those are real tough on recycling systems because they're right about the same size of the system they use to sort the glass, so it fits in those holes, so they got to stop the machine, poke it out, poke all the little cups out. Also, plastic film. There's so much plastic film in our life, and there's so many different kinds of it, too, not just your typical grocery store bags, but just the kind of bread that you can buy that has a bag inside the bag that you get, or the other tops off like cottage cheese containers and the things that wrap your board games and video games. There's so much of this kind of film. Only a little bit of it can be recycled, and you have to do the right steps with it. You can't just throw it in the cart, because anything really tangly can stop that sorting machinery on the back end. Mm-hmm. That's something else I'd really recommend people to do that are interested in this topic, is try to find some videos online that show what that recycling system looks like. I know here in the city of Madison, because we contract with a company called Pelletary Waste Systems to sort the recycling, I point people all the time, go to YouTube, search for Kip Street Recycling with two P's, because Pelletary is hard to spell. You know, so Kip Street's a little simpler. And then watch that 7-minute video they have that shows you the steps of what your recycling goes through in the city of Madison, all the people and robots and the machinery that's required to sort all this stuff out on the back end.
Talking with Brian Johnson, he's spokesperson for the City of Madison Streets Division. We're talking about recycling with your questions, 800-642-1234. Brian, lots of pizza consumed this time of year as well. What about those empty pizza boxes?
Well, the most of the tops can be recycled. The bottoms, not so much. Anything that's going to be food stained or covered with grease, that's going to go in the trash. So you want to rip the top off, because really it's going in the recycling. There's no reason to keep it whole or be delicate with this stuff at that point. Just rip the top part off. If it's clean, put that in the recycling. The greasy parts on the bottom, that's going to be trash. Now, at least until some sort of robust food scrap recycling program could be in place. I don't think there's a version of that can handle greasy pizza boxes in Wisconsin yet, but that could be coming. But for right now, the greasy parts in the trash, clean parts in your recycling.
How clean do you have to make your cans, your tin cans?
That is the million-dollar question with recycling. I get that a lot. Like, how clean is clean?
Uh-huh.
Honestly, it's honest effort. It matters. It really matters, because anything cleaner is going to be easier to sell on the back end. And also, if things have too much liquid in them, or they're just covered in food, it's pretty gross for the humans that are sorting the material on the back end. Plus, the cans and bottles may not bounce the right way through the system. Again, if you see that video, it'll all sort of make sense about how much gravity and the way the light sensors use to sort that material. So you have to just get the obvious food chunks off. No one's expecting it to be completely like fresh off the factory floor clean. But for peanut butter jars, say, you're going to have to give it a soak and wipe it out. Get the obvious chunks off. No one's expecting perfect, but they are expecting honest effort. Don't leave it like half full of lettuce with those plastic salad boxes that you can get out there.
With the holidays in full swing, we're looking at what can and cannot be recycled with Brian Johnson with Madison Streets Division. Wine bottles, wrapping paper, Christmas lights. What are your questions about recycling? What do you want to know about toy packaging? And what can land in the recycling bin? How about donating and recycling old electronics? What are your questions? We're at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Back in a moment with Brian Johnson here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're looking at recycling and sustainability as the holidays generate a whole lot of extra trash. Mid-December to late January is when recycling centers usually see the heaviest volume nationwide, driven a large part by cardboard shipping boxes and gift boxes and paper. And the fancier the holiday bags and wrapping paper, the less recyclable they become. Do you reuse gift wrap or packaging? Do you give gifts that don't require packaging? What questions do you have about what can go in the recycling bin? There's a line for you, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Madison's recycling coordinator, Brian Johnson, stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Joe is joining us from Madison. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I just wanted to let folks know that they could drop off electronic waste, like old TVs or microwaves or, you know, even computers or alarm clocks at a technical college or even possibly the university. When I was going to school here in Madison at MATC, there was a spot where people could bring in their electronic stuff that they no longer needed, and students would take it home, disassemble it, learn something about it, and use it for parts in a project or something. So,
yeah, thanks so much for bringing that. It sounds like Joe saying there are other options out there for how to, where to drop off these items.
Well, yeah, and just that's something that's great, something that's available here locally. There's going to be a lot of smaller options like this, either just appliances or furniture, even something like this, that just are sort of like fix-it clinics that are that could very well be popped up or available in certain communities. Yeah, if you take the time, you can probably find a reuse option or a fix-it option for a lot of the stuff that's in our lives. But sometimes it just takes a little bit of footwork. The cities and municipalities and counties that do this to work for the state of Wisconsin, we do the best we can, but there's still going to be some gaps that we can't fill. And something like this, if the technical colleges offer that, one, I would definitely call them to make certain that they take what you have, because there's still some hazards in there, like older microwaves have a capacitor in there that could have a carcinogen in there. The PCBs are in there. The leaded glass with the TVs we talked about, so with the flat panel TVs, there's fluorescence in there you got to be careful about. So they may not just be willing to accept everything. I know from speaking with some of the people in the more secondhand industry, to go to work one day and then be surprised that there's stuff outside your gate that's not supposed to be there, that that people thought they were doing the right thing, want to do the right thing with the stuff, still made a bad choice because they didn't make that follow through. They didn't call. They weren't certain. They just like, oh, they'll take it, and just drove the big thing over and dropped it off and then drove away and felt a little good about themselves, but they still may have did the wrong thing.
Joe, thanks for the call. We see a lot of glass that we want to recycle. What about wine bottles in particular?
Well, wine bottles are recyclable, but there's sort of a weird little problem with wine. Not a problem. It's just something I became aware of not too awful long ago talking with the Pelletieres, who actually run the sorting facility for Madison, is that any of the glass bottles that have a foil neck on them, that foil neck tends to stay intact through the recycling system and can be kind of a bit of a problem for the whole recycling line. It's not a huge issue. It's just something they just have to learn to wrestle with, because no one would think that of course, I have this wine bottle or champagne bottle. I have to get the foil all the way off it in order for the recycler to handle it on the back end. It's just something that crops up come big, like New Year's Eve with the more champagne bottles and wine and around the holidays, something they see a little bit more of. But even some beer bottles have that kind of foil thing around the neck. So in a perfect world, they wouldn't be there in the first place or peel them off, but recyclers kind of know to expect it, but you know, it's what it is.
What about Christmas lights that don't work anymore?
Oh yeah, don't put them in the recycling cart. That's going to be uniform everywhere, because those big tangly things are going to be a huge problem for that sorting material, like ropes, hoses. They see a lot of clothes in the recycling centers too, which have no business being in your recycling cart. Do not put clothes in your recycling cart, because they just get tangled up in all that sorting machinery. But with Christmas lights here in the city of Madison at our drop-off sites, that's something we can take in our electronics recycling bin. And so depending on what your recycling electronics recycling options are in your community, check there. They can very well take that kind of material there.
Let's talk a little bit more about China. Ever since China and other countries stopped processing U.S. recycling last year, it's kind of been unclear what can recycle, where there is a market, and for what. Can you help us understand the market dynamics around recycling right now?
Yeah, the one thing I've read all those national stories too about, like, with the China and the National Sword Program and that, and like even the Weather Channel, I think, ran a story about this recycling thing and all of these super clickbaity headlines about the recycling's in crisis and so on. Something I mentioned earlier, recycling is regional. Okay, that's something you have to keep in mind. Opportunities vary and the laws vary depending on where you live. So here in Wisconsin, we have a really strong recycling law that your paper, plastic, glass, the kind of the your typical recyclables that belong in a recycling cart, they have to be recycled. They are not going to be landfilled, or it's going to run contrary to state law. So what's going on right now, though, is that the money's not there because there's such a glut of domestic supply. The overseas markets that were gobbling up so much of the United States and the world's recyclables isn't there. So there's just so much here. Like, paper is a good example of this. There's millions of pounds of paper waiting to be processed on docks around places. So if you run a paper mill, it's a good time to own a paper mill, because some of them are actually being, paper mills are being paid to accept material that they can then turn into paper and then turn and sell again. So they're getting paid on both ends of it right now, because that's just the way the market is. But that's going to turn. It just takes time to make the investments. I see a lot of the, I get emails of the industry publications that about other investments of plastic manufacturers opening up in the Southeast or new paper mills in the Midwest. It just takes a long time for that, this investment to get there, to kind of help buoy the market up to make it a little bit more profitable, because that's what makes recycling work, ultimately. Recyclables that we put in our cart, that's the raw material for the circular economy. And so that, but it's an economy. Someone has to have to buy the material and wanted to sell it to somebody else who can in turn sell it to make something new on the back end.
Talking with Brian Johnson, spokesperson for the City of Madison Streets Division, we're looking at recycling. John sent us an email asking, are we able to recycle plastics used to package pre-packaged proteins like beef snacks and sticks and jerkies, uncooked steaks and chicken?
Well, depends on where you live, but I'm thinking the answer is going to be no. That kind of plastic film stuff like that, yeah, that's going to be something that's not 100% certain. There's going to be a lot of variability, for one, as to what type of plastic film that thing's actually made out of. But chances are it's not going to be that grocery store plastic bag kind of film that you can take back to grocery stores or in the City of Madison package correctly to put in the cart. That's a whole other thing that... Anybody else listening to this, like outside of the City of Madison, do not put plastic bags in your recycling cart. In the City of Madison, we're a little special the way you can take all your grocery store bags, bundle it inside another one, tie it really tight closed where it's about the size of a basketball, then that can go in your recycling cart. We're unique for the state for that in the City of Madison. No one else can do that. But grocery store take-back programs are fine as well. But don't put the bags in loose. You can't just throw a handful of plastic film in your cart. That's a problem. But that, yeah, that can kind of like beef jerky wrappers and stuff like that. No, that's just going to have to go to the trash.
One last question here as we wrap up. Do you have any tips for reducing our waste, making sure we recycle things correctly and do a better job?
Well, one, just first up, just stay engaged with where you live and know what the rules are. That's the first simple step, because anybody that picks up recycling, they're going to have a list of what they can and can't take. Follow those rules. And if you have questions, try to ask, because our universe of stuff is extremely complicated. I hear a lot about how recycling is so complicated. Like, no, it's our stuff is so complicated that we have all these strange polymers that we've made up and everything else. And so just double check the rules, know what you're doing, and then just right size your shopping as well. Like if you're going to the grocery store, buy what you need, shop with the list. Reuse options are great. I know at least here in Madison, we have a really robust network of St. Vincent de Paul's. I think most of the books I own are from a St. Vincent de Paul's. And just sort of, again, kind of keep that circular economy moving like that.
Brian, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Brian Johnson is the Recycling Coordinator and Public Information Officer for the City of Madison's Streets Division. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.